Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. I've had some wonderful interviews lately from directors, primarily from the Palm Beach International Film Festival, which ended not too long ago. Last week, I had Jennifer Ash Rudick from Dîner en Blanc. There's some some different pronunciations for that. I've heard Dîner en Blanc and Dîner en Blanc. I'm not sure exactly what the correct pronunciation is, but it's a French film told with English subtitles. Well, today I'm interviewing Lisa Pola, the director of The Shift, and I think I have him on the line. Let's see.
Hey, Rachel.
Okay,
how
Lee,
are you
there? Good. Yeah. How are you?
Good. Thanks
Great.
For having me on.
You're welcome. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about this medical drama that you put together, The Shift, which is really well done, I have to say.
Thank you so much. Well, we actually started production in South Florida about a year and a half ago, and I worked with Leonel Oliva, who's the star and the producer of the film. I had worked with him a couple projects out here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I just really, you know, obviously I respected his acting talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was our relationship out here. And he had brought me the script based on his experiences in the emergency room as a nurse. Of course, it's all fictionalized, but it's loosely based on, you know, his experiences as a nurse. And I just remember reading the first couple of pages and just really being sucked into the world. The heaviness of the world, you know, what goes on in there, the codes, and, you know, it was just very intense. And, you know, I think you're so used to seeing, you know, TV dramas and everything being revolved around the nurse, revolved around the doctors and the patients. And, you know, obviously that's a big part of it, but, you know, the nurses are just, you know, they're by the bedsides of the patients, especially closer to the end, and it just really opened my eyes, because I was ignorant to a lot of that, you know, just as my, you know, for myself. And
yeah,
I just the first couple of pages, just being brought into that world, I just knew I wanted to be a part of it. And obviously, you know, Leo being a really good actor, it was inevitable that he played the role as well.
Yeah, and the aspect about the brother, was that something that was true to his life, or was that fictionalized?
That was fictionalized, but, you know, I think that there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of truth to it, in that he's seen things like that happen in the emergency room, and to just make it as personal as he could just brought out the message on an even stronger level.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you have to change the script once you got to production? You know, that inevitably happens. Was there a lot of changing or not?
It's funny you ask that, because I know that when we were in the pre-production phase, you know, I was trying to hone the story in a little bit more as far as you know, structure goes. Not that it didn't have structure, but, you know, it was more about it being kind of a neorealism story, being very authentic, and you know, I was trying to, I guess, be more conventional with the storyline, you know, and you know, I think that, you know, me and Leo had some differences, you know, when in pre-production, but ultimately, you know, I think I, you know, for me, just translating his story to the screen, I think I had to sit back and realize that to keep this aura of authenticity alive, it was just to kind of sit back and you know, let the story play out a little bit more as it would happen in real life, and not focus so much on, you know, having, you know, something happen by a certain time, like, you know, catalyst, but, you know, 10 minutes in and all that kind of stuff. And when I kind of, like, sat back and, you know, just let it unfold, I was able to see his vision more clearly. And, you know, I'm thankful that I did, and I think you know, that he is, obviously. And, you know, so there was some, you know, minimal changes, but, you know, and more along the lines of dialogue and that kind of thing. But for the most part, this script and the way that, you know, the finished product goes, it was very true to his original vision. And, you know, I think right. I just, you know, in the end, that was the way to go, to keep it real.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you make the decision to kind of tell the story with flashbacks about the brother, or was that written into the script that way?
That was part of the original script. I think, you know, we actually did pickups after doing the principal photography. And, mm-hmm. you know, because I think we realized somewhere around the director's cut, we realized that we had to build a little bit more into Kale's character to make him identifiable as far as the audience is concerned, to make him, you know, I guess essentially likable, just to kind of understand what he was going through with mm-hmm. the brother. And, you know, because, you know, Kale comes off a little bit detached and closed off, and I think
yeah.
ultimately you realize that he's enduring this, you know, this terrible experience. And, you know, when you finally find out, you know, don't want to give it away, I guess, for people who
right.
haven't seen the movie, but when he finds out, you know, I guess the twist, who the patient is that he brings in, it's, you know, at that point you identify with him because you know that, you know, with the brother and everything. But I think
mm-hmm.
it was important to build in the relationship with his family through flashbacks to set his character up as a human
yeah.
being, actually.
Now, how did you get Danny Glover?
That is, you know, that's a great story. It really started, unfortunately, it didn't work out in South Florida when we started production. That's originally where we wanted to shoot it. And, you know, all of us are from South Florida. Mm-hmm. All the main, mm-hmm. you know, the principal heads of the production, Melanie DiPietro, the producer, and Leo's from Miami, and my family's in Miami and everything. And when we made the slide over to Los Angeles, it was about 2 or 3 months until the production kicked up again. And during that period, Melanie had asked me to give her a list of like five actors who I'd ultimately want to play Floyd, because we were trying to mm-hmm. attach a name of some sort. And
yeah.
I gave her five names from, like, TV, I think, you know, and just names that I thought were attainable, you know. And
mm-hmm.
she looked at the list and she's like, well, is this who you really, really want to play the role? Like, I mean, go, you know,
go big.
These are good actors, but, yeah, think a little bigger. And, you know, we had a long conversation, and, you know, ultimately, you know, Danny Glover was thrown into the mix because, you know, Danny, to me, obviously, I thought he was unattainable for our
mm-hmm.
budget. And I just, you know, for me, I had a kind of a childhood connection with Danny just because I had watched the movie Grand Canyon. It was one of my favorite movies, his role in that movie. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, the Lethal Weapon movies and all that. So he's an iconic, you know, figure in my childhood. And just even the thought to have him is like, just, it was completely out of my belief system. But she said, you know, let me take a look at it. And there was about, you know, there's a couple other big name actors. And the long and short of it is she actually knew when she went through her contacts, one of her contacts, she had a kind of like an indirect contact to him. That person was supposed to give Danny the script. And again, this is over the 3 month period between the, you know, moving from Miami to Los Angeles. So after like a month, you know, apparently, you know, she got to the contact. It ultimately never got to Danny. And so, you know, it's not something that, you know, fazed me too much. You know, I know that it was the prospects of actually landing Danny was not, you know, the prospects weren't very high, but, you know, she didn't give up. She went back and she said, you know, let me see if we can contact his agents. And she pitched the agents the script and then ultimately got it read by him and the agents, and they came back and they, you know, apparently he liked the script and he identified with it. He had some personal experiences that I'd later find out that were kind of closely resembled in the film. And, you know, they worked it out amongst each other. And so this is about 3 or 4 weeks before production.
Wow.
So I start hearing the Danny Glover rumors again. And I just didn't, like, I mean, for me, I'm a little bit of a realist sometimes, and I didn't really want to believe it, you know. But, and
mm-hmm.
To me, it was so far-fetched that it was going to actually happen. Because, again, we were really, really, really low, our production budget. And about a week before production, we're doing rehearsals. We still don't have the role of Floyd cast because we're holding out this hope that, you know, we're going to actually land Danny Glover. It's about a week before production, and, you know, Melanie comes to me and she says, it might actually happen. They're still negotiating, and he still wants to do the project, and, you know, so on and so forth. I say, okay. Now, we continue to do rehearsals and stuff without casting Floyd. Then it goes to the day before production. I mean, you can't script this stuff.
Wow.
The day before production, he's still not officially on board. And we're doing our last looks inside the hospital and, you know, setting it all up. And now it's the night before the first day of filming. And so we're about 12 hours away. And so I get a call from Melanie, and she says that Danny is on a plane. He's about to get on a plane and fly to Los Angeles and do his fitting in the hotel over here, and that I was going to meet him with the costume designer and, you know, just kind of have a little chat about, you know, the character and all that. So I'm starting to, like, you know, now I'm starting to see that this is going to actually happen. So it's like 11 or 12 at night, I think. And finally, I get a call again from Melanie. She says that he never got on the plane. His agents told him to get off the plane because there was a stipulation in the contract. So he never got on the plane. So he's still at Berkeley.
Oh,
and,
my God.
Like, long story short, he finally gets on the plane, gets here 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And, you know, he gets fitted in his hotel room, and me and Leo go up and we sit down, and he's just exhausted. But, you know, he stayed up to talk with us and talk about the character in the movie and what it meant to him. But at, you know, finally at one point we're like, you know, we're going to roll in 3 hours. I mean, the call time was like 6 a.m. So we're 3 or 4 hours away from, you know, the first day. And so, so we left him at the hotel around 2. A couple hours later, we're on set. And, you know, obviously the first day of any set is always chaotic, you know, because all the moving pieces have to, like, you know, you have to, you know, everyone's meeting each other for the first time a lot of times. And, you know, you're just getting, even if you've worked with people before, it's every project's different. So you're just getting, you know,
getting acquainted
and getting to know each other. And but we had really the most ambitious couple of days of filming to start off with, and that's what, you know, with the main start, we had to shoot him out in 3 days. And we actually started with the toughest scene is when he's, you know, he's doing the scene at the very beginning when Floyd is going over the, you know, the duties for that night. And it's very, you know, the jargon is very technical. And, you know, it was the toughest scene for all of us to do and to start out with it. But, you know, in a way I was happy that we started from, you know, the hardest, because it just got, you know, once we got acquainted, it just kind of got easier from there. But it was very surreal. Like, you know, honestly, the first take to see, you know, Danny in the frame, and the guys, just there's a reason that he's an iconic figure and all of that. Just he totally soaks you in. He's a professional to the he's just a true professional and a great actor, and his presence on screen is just unrivaled, you know. So it was surreal. But you know, once we got working, and it was, you know, he was a true professional. He hit his marks, and it was a really, really great experience.
Great. He had a mix of, you know, the veteran actor, and then you have kind of a new actors. And what was it like to direct both elements? You know, both people, everybody.
You mean like Leo and Danny?
Yeah,
together?
Exactly.
Well, it's funny, you know, it's Leo is, he's a very straightforward actor, you know, and he's got a thick skin, and I think, and that was actually new for me, because not that, you know, I'm not saying actors are thin-skinned, I just, you know, acting in general, it's a very sensitive thing. I've tried to act myself, and I've taken a couple of classes just to learn that side of things, and it's very tough, and it's very easily to be thrown off mentally, and it's not even your fault. It doesn't matter if you're a thin-skinned person or not. It just, when you're dealing with things that are so emotionally involving, if you get distracted, it's so easy to get distracted and get self-conscious as an actor.
Yeah.
But Leo is very, you know, Leo kind of, you know, he does his thing, and he's unwavering, and, you know, when in giving him direction, he doesn't need to be pampered by any means. He doesn't need to be really talked to in the sense that, you know, you don't got to kind of beat him around the bush. You just kind of, he likes things very direct. And so that was very new for me. You know, in his own way, Danny's the same way, because, you know, I think based on Danny's experience, he's been acting for a long time. You know, I think he's, you know, just being very short with him was the best way to go. He just, you know, tell me where to go, where to be, and what to do, and, you know, I'll bring it, you know, and just. So they were, it was very similar in that sense. So it actually was a pleasure for me, and I could just kind of sit back and just, you know, once in a while give a tweak here and there, but, you know, they were both very professional in their own ways, and they came to play, and they were great.
Now, where was this shot? Where was the hospital that you used?
We used USC Hospital, which was, they just built the new one, I want to say like 5 years ago. And the old one, that they never actually knocked it down because it was too expensive to do it, from what I'm told. So they have the old hospital that's kind of just standing, lurking behind it, kind of like this huge haunted mansion. And we used the exterior of it, 'cause just it has so much character on the poster and in the film. But it's, you know, it's supposedly haunted, and you know, I think there was some stories, you know, on the set of people hearing and seeing things. I don't know about seeing things, but definitely, you know, I was there for a couple of weeks in pre-production, and when we first got the location, it was on the fifth floor, and it's an abandoned hospital. So, you know, you got like old syringes and all kinds of stuff laying around, and, you know, old profiles, and it was very, very, very dark, and, you know, it's big. It's easy to get lost in the floor in the hospital. And, you know, the floors that are above it and below it, I don't, you know, all of those are abandoned too. So when I was working with, in pre-production, we just basically, you know, our production designer, Soy Young, she, you know, me and her were just kind of walking around and finding materials, and Leo came. We were just, you know, collecting materials to use as props that were just laying around. But, you know, we had to be careful because, you know, a lot of them were dirty. But just the things that we saw were, it definitely, the creep factor was definitely there. But, you know, we we really did a number as far as, you know, kind of cleaning it up. And then we had, you know, the crew from the hospital, you know, they cleaned the floors. And, it, you know, we really transformed it into a working, active ER. And I think that the old, you know, just the history of the place and the kind of the worn walls and the emergency room with the, you know, the old-fashioned curtains and stuff, it just added a dimension, a character to the film that I think worked. But it was definitely an experience to shoot there. And, you know, I think it was just very, very unique. But
How long did it take you to shoot?
In Los Angeles, it took... Well, that was the thing. It was a very ambitious shoot schedule. We shot over, principal photography was over 15 days. But the catch with the hospital, which, you know, obviously we were really blessed to have that location, especially on the level that we're working at and, you know, the amount that we paid for it and all that. You know, we were truly blessed. But the one catch was that we couldn't shoot there every day. We had, you know, they allowed us to shoot there for 15 days. I mean, ultimately, I think we were only supposed to shoot there for 12 days. But, you know, we extended it just because it was just impossible to shoot 100 pages in 12 days, at least, you know, the way that we were working. But we couldn't shoot, you know, every day in the sense of, like, we couldn't shoot Monday through Friday or Monday through Saturday. We could only shoot 2 or 3 days a week. So the 15 days were spanned out over 4 weeks, and so we'd have to shoot on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then come and drop production, and then come back the following Monday. So, you know, I think that our momentum was cut off a little bit, but you know, it just I think when you're on a production, it, you know, once things get going again, you make it work. And but it was definitely very ambitious, and we were shooting close to 9 to 10 pages a day on a lot of occasions.
Wow.
Which, you know, to put it in perspective, you know, I think a Hollywood movie or, you know, a fully financed production, or, you know, the usual set probably shoots 2 to 3 pages. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously in a lot of independent projects, you're shooting a lot more, especially
right.
with digital and all that. But the odd thing was we were shooting on digital, but we were shooting on the Red MX, and that camera has to be lit and treated like a film camera. So, you know, instead of reels, you have cards. But, you know, it was really my first experience on digital where I had to treat it like film. Like, you know, that my DP, you know, told me after the first couple of scenes, he's like, you know, we have to cut down on the amount of footage. It's just like film. Just because, you know, instead of film reels and film stock, you're dealing with time. You know, the cards only have so much amount of space. So, you know, with that in mind, you know, shooting all 10 pages a day was like, it was, you know, essentially like shooting, you know, on 35 millimeter. So it was, and, you know, to light it, you know, the setup time takes a long time. But, you know, we made it work, and, you know, I think the biggest thing for me was just making sure that the actors were believable, and, you know, thank goodness that our actors were, you know, to me, they were top-notch.
Yeah, they were. What do you hope people will come away from with watching this film? It seems to have a powerful message. What is that? What do you think people will come away from?
I think people when it comes to this issue are either on one side or the other, you know, as far as you know, allowing their loved ones to live despite suffering or letting them go peacefully. And I think people have very strong, you know, strong opinions about it. And I think, you know, me and Leo always talk about it, you know. We definitely share the same, the theme and the message of the movie is the same. But for me, in the storytelling, it was allowing people to kind of see glimpses of both sides, and you know, being in the middle and realizing that they can make their own decision on it, you know, and it doesn't have to, you know, just to open their eyes to what's going on behind the scenes, because a lot of times the family doesn't see what's going on. And it's really the nurses a lot of times that they're sitting there by the bedside every minute of every day, and they're there a lot of times, you know, they're there more than the family is, and it's allowing people to see the glimpse behind the curtains and just to kind of open their mind to the issue. You know, I think that was for me the number one priority. And then, you know, of course, the theme and message of, you know, are we truly valuing our lives, or you know, are we truly living, or are we just trying to stay alive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the vision that, you know, I think we definitely all shared as filmmakers.
Now, you won an audience award for Best in Florida, Best Film. Were you surprised?
Oh, I definitely was. I didn't, when we went to the final banquet event, I'd heard kind of whispers that, you hear things here, you know, here and there, but I didn't go into the award ceremony thinking that we were going to come away with an award, you know, and that wasn't, had anything to do with the, you know, really the film, but I think we were all shocked in a sense, and it was a great thing, because the turnout for both screenings, the first one was, we were in a 450 seat theater. It started out as a, you know, like an, I think 100 seat theater, and then we sold that out, and it bumped up, and then we sold out three times, and then they moved us to the biggest theater in the AMC, and which was really exciting. And there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of people from the medical field that came out, and nurses, and they definitely connected with the movie, and they were, you know, they were thankful to see something that, you know, showed them in essentially a positive light or a realistic light. And, you know, having them being a big part of the audience was definitely, that definitely played in. I think they gave it, you know, really good ratings. And so, yeah, just knowing that the film resonated with people was definitely, you know, I think all of us as filmmakers were humbled by it. And I think it's a big score for the film to be able to come away with that award. And, you know, hopefully it grows from there, and, you know, we go on to the next festival, and, you know, it continues to get some buzz, because it's truly a story and a message that needs to get out there.
Mm-hmm. Besides the Palm Beach International Film Festival, was it seen at any other festivals yet?
That was the world premiere, and I know Leo and Melanie, especially since it was close to home and there was a lot of family there, I think it had gotten into other festivals, but that was the one that they chose to have the world premiere at. I don't know what the plan is for it next. I know that they're definitely open to going the next step of the festival, obviously, but and getting into the next one. I don't know what the plan is exactly, but I know that they definitely want to get it out there, and the sooner the better.
Do you have any thoughts for distribution, or have you talked to anybody about distribution at all?
I know that they talked to, I think that they're trying to do, and this would be great, going through some universities and the medical departments and screening the film sort of like in a theatrical release, but for students and, you know, people of the medical field, and kind of growing it through that demographic. And then, you know, hopefully going mainstream, ultimately, that would be great if we could get, you know, a theatrical release on a mainstream level. It's a hard deal, but I think that the route that they're taking going through that demographic first is, I think it's a great one for a film like this.
Well, I think it's a strong enough film that you definitely should be able to get a mainstream release of some sort, whether it's, even if it's VOD, something, because I think it definitely, the acting is excellent. It was very well done.
And thank you very much. I'm glad that, you know, you were able to connect with it and everything. And it is a tribute to the actors. I mean, they definitely, you know, without, if they weren't believable, the movie's not believable. You know,
it was funny because I didn't, you know, I've met Leo, and I completely forgot about Leo being in the film. And I'm watching, I'm like, who is this actor? He's so good. And I'm like, oh my God, it's Leo. You know, I didn't even recognize him. He was so good.
And he's completely different in real life. You know.
Yeah, he is.
He's very funny and goofy. And it's odd if you see us behind the scenes, even Melanie. You know, the film's very obviously very very serious. And deals with a very heavy subject matter, but you know, behind the scenes we're kind of goofy and funny, and you know, I Leo definitely is, and you know, very sociable and all that kind of stuff. So it's not odd that you'd be surprised by seeing him in his performance, because it's definitely a complete turnaround for him as a character.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, do you have a website for the film that people can check out?
That is a great question. If you go to Mad Elephant Incorporated, I believe, I'm really sorry if I'm getting this wrong, but the name of the company, Melanie's company, is Mad Elephant. You can Google it. That's where most of the information on the shift is. And, you know, obviously the trailer is online. You can go to YouTube and type in the shift trailer with Danny Glover. And... Mm-hmm. And then the Facebook page is, you know, facebook.com/theshiftmovie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I advise going to Mad Elephant first to get most of the information.
Okay. Now, are you working on another project already, or are you just working on getting this one out?
I am. I've been working on a script for a couple of years, and that's not because me and my father wrote the script, but it's based on a mixed martial arts fighter. So we put a lot of time and research into the project, and I think, you know, for us, it's, you know, to me, it's kind of lifting off the roof of the perception of mixed martial arts fighters being kind of violent and it being a, you know, kind of a brutal sport. And it actually being a really, really beautiful sport underneath. You know, it has a plethora of the, you know, the best, you know, mixed martial arts throughout history. And, you know, I think when people watch UFC and all that kind of stuff, it's, you know, they misunderstand it. And so that's what the next project entails, is it's about a fighter who's misunderstood. And, you know, I like to pitch it as Rocky meets The Wrestler in the MMA world.
Mm.
And so we're in development on that and hoping to have it off the ground and shooting in the summer.
And you have a couple films that you did that were released through Lionsgate. Tell me about those real quick.
Know Thy Enemy and Harder They Fall were my first two films. Harder They Fall I shot coming straight out of college. And, you know, it was bare bones crew. In a sense, actually, I was... You know, me and a friend were shooting it, and my friends were starring in it. But that was basically a camera and a couple of lights, and we were just running around Miami. And that was about two kickboxers in Miami. So that had some martial arts in it. And
right.
And Know Thy Enemy a couple of years later, you know, long story short, based on the you know, Harder They Fall had gone to a couple of festivals and got a little bit of buzz around Miami. And I met, which enabled me to meet a couple key professionals in the industry. And so when I was developing the next project, Know Thy Enemy, which was about it's about a rap artist who's manipulated by the music and entertainment industry. You know, he's a musician, but to market him, he has to be they market him as a gangster rapper, because that's what sells.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of an unveiling of that. Of that world. And luckily, both films, when when I came out to Los Angeles, both films we had them, and we were trying to pitch the screeners out here. The long and short of it, Lionsgate picked it up through our sales agent, and they bought both films outright, which, you know, I definitely feel blessed, you know, just to have the opportunity to have that happen. I know it's very tough. It's even for finished films to get that kind of, you know, to get bought and sold. So, you know, we had a DVD release throughout North America. So it did get out there, and, you know, I think the only last thing I'll say about that is that, you know, though both movies fit in a genre and they both, you know, they were both marketable in that sense. The one thing when I sat down with Lionsgate, and what they told me was that even though they could package the movies, they were really grateful to be able to sell movies that were, you know, at least the story was true to itself, and that they both had messages. And, you know, that's what I like to think. You know, me and the filmmakers for both movies were, you know, we made movies that were marketable, but we told our own stories with them, and there was a reason we made them. And so, you know, definitely grateful for that. And then obviously that, you know, that launched the opportunity to shoot The Shift. So, it's been a very cool run.
Now, do you have a personal website that you want to give out at all, or Facebook or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Fieldlightfilms.com. That's field like baseball field and light as in sunlight. Fieldlightfilms.com. You can see the trailers for all these movies and the link to the Lionsgate page to pick up the movies, hopefully, if you want. And then you can see the synopsis for Ultimate, which is the mixed martial arts project, ways that you can get involved with that if you want. And, you know, of course, The Shift and all that. All the information is there. Feellightfilms.com.
So. Perfect.
Awesome.
Well, we're running out of time. But I thank you for being on today. And, you know, when you get the next one done, I can maybe bring you back.
I'd love to do it again. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been great. And thank you for watching the movie. And, please tell your friends and everyone. Word of mouth is the best. And look forward to talking to you again. Thank you very much, Rachel.
All right. All right. Thanks, Lee.
All right.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Well, that was a great interview with Lee Cipolla. I should ask him how to pronounce his name. I think it's Cipolla. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. But, well, guys, thanks for tuning in again today. And it's been a busy weekend of film screenings here in Florida. I just saw Barbie Castro's Assumed Killer. She was the star in the film, and she produced it. And that was a really great film that I hope to see more of and hopefully get distribution. It's supposed to go to TV. And so that was fun. And also there was a screening of another movie called Cupcake last night as well. There's something coming up, I've mentioned it before, on May 16th, Robert Adanto is showing his film Rising Tide at the Art and Culture Center of Hollywood. So if you're here in Florida, you want to check that out. Also today, the Miami Gay and Lesbian Film Festival is wrapping up, so I don't know exactly the details of what's happening tonight, but you can always check it out, Google it, and check out what they're up to for the final night. And just keep an eye out for all kinds of film activity, because I heard a rumor last night that it's going to be picking up. So all you actors out there, it's good news for you, because there's supposed to be some more filming going on over the summer. So that's always good news. But guys, if you are a filmmaker out there and you'd like to be on the show, please email me. My email address is ravenprods, ravenprods, @yahoo.com. And as you can see, I interview people from all over, not just Florida, Los Angeles, New York, England, you have it. I've interviewed them. So no matter where you are, I can interview you over the phone, no problem. Also, check out my Facebook site, which is Indie Streak, just like this show, and please like the page. And I'm just kind of waiting for more of an audience to build on that Facebook page, and once it does, I'll be posting more information up there, castings and events and that kind of thing. I've been a little lax on it because I'm just waiting for more people to sign up. Okay, guys, well, tune in next week, Sunday, just like today, next Sunday at 1 o'clock, and we'll see who I'm interviewing next week. In the meantime, you can go back and listen to the archives to some of the other directors that I've interviewed. And please, please, please pass it on to your friends. I'd like this to get out to everybody. So if you like the show, please pass it along. And I will talk to you guys next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.